Hello and welcome to the Fantasy Game Plan Podcast. My name is Leo Howell and I am joined, as always, with Matt Harmon, who I will not say any nice words about at the start of this podcast. Matt, how are you doing today?
Things are back to normal. I feel much better, much more comfortable without the fake niceties to start the show off.
That's good, yes.
I'm doing good, man. It's good to be back and ready for football tomorrow. It's finally here.
Football is here, and by the we're recording this on Wednesday night, so that's what he means by tomorrow. You're probably just, I'm going to try to have this out on Wednesday night. If not, it's going to be early Thursday morning. Either way, you're probably listening to this on Thursday, so football is today, so it's even closer. And yeah, so Seahawks versus Packers, the revenge of the Fail Mary, as it were, will be taking place, and that means the start of fantasy football season as well. So we are going to cram in as much as we can in terms of last-minute fantasy advice for you on this episode so that you're ready for fantasy football season. With that in mind, one thing that Matt and I have been seeing a lot of discussion about on the Twitter, on different questions and things that we've been seeing on websites is there's a lot of people who are already questioning some of their draft picks. And it brings up a really good discussion. There is a widely held idiom, cliche, I don't know, however you view it, in fantasy football that you should always start your studs. That is to say, if you draft a guy in the first round, you drafted him there because he's one of the 12 best players in fantasy football, so you should just start him every week. And I feel like that's the perfect kind of thing for us to tackle on this podcast. So I will ask you, and this will require a shorter answer. We'll get into obviously more of the strategy behind it. But if you draft a guy in the first round, is there any way that he is on your bench during week one?
Probably not. Definitely not. I'd say if I draft a guy in the first two rounds, at least, there's no chance he's on my bench because I don't know. You know, these are the guys that are the best players in the league. They're the best players in fantasy football, and it would take a seriously bad matchup, and even then I wouldn't do it, you know, to put a guy that I drafted that high on my bench. And I actually started some of the ruckus when I said my two rules for fantasy football were, one, be aggressive, and two, don't sit your studs. And of course, you know, that brings up to the subjectivity of what's a stud to you, which is something I went back and forth on. But in general, no, I'm starting the guys that I drafted high because I drafted them high for a reason. I think they're going to be really good. And I don't think that's going to just get started off on a wrong foot. That just seems kind of counterintuitive to me.
That's exactly my stance on it, is that if you drafted a guy in the first three rounds, it's because you think that he is one of the 30 best players in a game where, you know, 150 are going to be on rosters. You're making a big statement about the players you take that early, and you need to keep that in mind when it comes time to making your first lineup, and particularly when it's a running back or it's a wide receiver or a tight end if you're in a league where you know, tight ends are there's multiple tight end positions basically, or quarterbacks in a two quarterback league. The issue is that for a lot of people, their bigger questions are about quarterbacks and tight ends when you've only got one guy in those positions on your lineup, because I don't see a ton of questions of, should I start Eddie Lacy or Chris Ivory? Like, you're not seeing that question. You are seeing, should I start Aaron Rodgers or Colin Kaepernick? Like, people are legitimately asking that. I've seen that exact scenario raised a couple times. And so I think that maybe raises that raises a question of, why did you draft that way versus always start your studs? Because it's in a vacuum, that's not an illegitimate question. Is Colin Kaepernick against the Dallas Cowboys defense or Aaron Rodgers against the Seahawks defense? Even just, you know, not like in daily fantasy where there's prices just head to head, like that's a pretty close, you know, the potential scoring's pretty even there. But that is to say that if you wound up with both, and, you know, even if I'll give you the benefit of doubt, even if you got Kaepernick really late, like, that's kind of the reason why you don't back up a stud quarterback. Like, not only just start your studs, but, like, trust your studs. And, like, if you're gonna invest heavily in a Jimmy Graham, in a Aaron Rodgers, in a Peyton Manning, like, you've got to really roll with those guys, because the advantage you get from them is from them being your every week, don't worry about it, they're always there, you know, completely reliable player that you don't have to spend your 11th round pick on Colin Kaepernick, even if that's a great deal on Colin Kaepernick. Because if you had spent that on a backup running back instead, that's just more depth at a more volatile position where you're not as strong because you spent an early pick on your quarterback. So I feel like there are certain exceptions where, sure, it becomes a discussion, but I feel like it reveals flaws in drafting philosophy more than it does anything else. I feel like it's still a situation where if you're in the situation right now where you're trying to decide between Aaron Rodgers and Colin Kaepernick on your team, my advice to you is not only to start Aaron Rodgers, but to start Aaron Rodgers and trade Colin Kaepernick for a backup running back or receiver and use your waiver wire, unless you're in some... There are some leagues where you probably need to hold two quarterbacks if it's like a 16-team league or something, and there is no waiver wire of quarterbacks. But otherwise, like, you don't need to hold a backup quarterback when you've got Aaron Rodgers. And he's still... Aaron Rodgers, stifled, quote-unquote, by the Seahawks defense, is still going to be better than most other quarterbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, one part that I think you're overthinking it if you just sit there and say, oh, well, Colin Kaepernick is going against the Cowboys defense. You know, that they're terrible. I should play him. And the Seahawks are great. I shouldn't play Aaron Rodgers. That's too much. I think you're going into it too deep. You just got to look at it as, hey, Aaron Rodgers is one of my best players on my fantasy team.
You're looking at the versus part more than you are the first part. Like, you have to look at the name before you look at the versus, because it's very easy to get caught up in matchups. Particularly, like, I feel like this is something I even struggle with since I've started playing daily fantasy, is looking at that matchup and trying to get those big, potentially huge games because of bad matchups, and particularly in season long fantasy, like, you just can't do that. You've got to realize that the safer play, the better play, the smarter play is to take the better player, even if it's a tough matchup. And a guy like Aaron Rodgers is matchup proof. Like, if we were talking about, you know, Matt Ryan versus Colin Kaepernick, you know, then it becomes a discussion, because those two names are in the same tier, but you can't leap multiple tiers just because you've got a different matchup like that.
Yeah, and also I think we look at matchups, and that's definitely, you know, you got to look at matchups playing fantasy football.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Just,
you got to do that, but like I said, you can't overthink it, because, you know, what if the 49ers, just a hypothetical, and you know, maybe it's not so smart to play hypotheticals, but, you know, what if the 49ers go out and they jump up to a, you know, really quick lead on the Cowboys, and because they're running the ball all over their really weak front seven, and then Colin Kaepernick's not even throwing the ball in the second half, and, you know, you get a meager stat line despite the fact that this was a really good matchup.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, you know,
it's not just hypothetical. This, really, what that is that's considering game flow. It's considering game script or whatever.
Exactly. I think game script is more important than matchup. And, you know, it's something that's so easily overlooked.
Because Aaron Rodgers will be throwing for four quarters against the Seahawks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and do we really, I mean, what's Aaron Rodgers' floor, and how close is that to Colin Kaepernick's ceiling, even in a great matchup? You know, because
of 300 yards and two touchdowns. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if Aaron Rodgers gets 300 yards and two touchdowns, and that's still kind of Kaepernick's ceiling with just more rushing than Rodgers would get. But
exactly, and you know, I had somebody come back to me, you know, as I was going back and forth about this, specifically this situation. I was saying, you know what, and I'm just going to feel better, you know, with Rodgers out there, because that's just the smarter thing to do. And, you know, if I bench Rodgers and I put Kaepernick out there and Kaepernick scores less points, I'm going to look back on it, you know, Monday morning and be like, well, duh, of course. Why did I bench Aaron Rodgers? He's the better player. And I'd be kicking myself because I overthought it. And somebody came back to me and said, oh, well, if you, you know, if you play to not regret things, then you're not made for fantasy football. And, you know,
I mean, you're right, though, because ultimately what you're saying is you made the, you're not making the right decision by picking Kaepernick. You may just be making, you may just be picking the right outcome when it's over, but going into it, it's not the right decision because you're taking the worst player with not a good enough matchup advantage to compensate. But at the end of the day, the result may still be there, but it's about the process. It's not about the result because you can find anecdotes all over the place of I started this guy instead of this guy and he scored me more points. Like that's fine. But in this case, you're talking about a top three quarterback in a top three tier that is way ahead of everybody else versus a questionable mid-tier quarterback. Like the obvious choice there, regardless of matchup, you go with the better guy. Like it's not a question. So yeah, like you're going to feel better about it because if you're wrong, but you use the right process, that's a sign that you just got a bad beat. Like you just came out on the wrong end of a coin flip, and that's whatever, that happens in fantasy football. But if you make it a habit of chasing that out, that those slim odds on the fifth card, to use a poker analogy, if you're, you know, if you feel like you can, you know, go all in when you've only got like three or four outs on the last card, like you can't keep on chasing that and expect to stay in it. So that's why you kind of have to stick to your studs, is because it's the right decision. They're the better players.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I think that the term stud is subjective, but, you know, specifically Aaron Rodgers, he's a stud. I mean, we can agree on that.
And I own him on one team, but that's right. Just because of how I construct my rosters. If I had him, I'd start him.
Yeah, I would say, and quarterback is the toughest. I think I said this a couple times, and I think we were talking about it, that quarterback's a tough one to use this strategy on because people want to call Cam Newton a stud because he's been a top five quarterback. I wouldn't call him a stud because he's more streaky player
There are three quarterbacks.
There's studs. Three. Exactly. Yeah. And there's probably only five at each position, and tight end, there's probably only two or three that, you know, that I would consider a stud, and every weak guy that you just don't take out of your lineup, barring injury for any reason.
I feel like it's kind of deeper at the other positions just because they're, if you had a WR1 and WR2 and WR3, like, sure, but like, I don't see a scenario in which I'm not starting a Vincent Jackson if I took him in the third or fourth round.
Yeah, exactly. I just think in general, it's.
I mean, it's obviously, just, something happens, too, injuries. Yeah. There are other factors. Like if it's a weather game where you know it's going to be snowing heavily and like 30-mile-an-hour winds. But all other things being equal, if you're comparing, you know, your Vincent Jackson to your, who's a borderline,
Kendall Wright. I mean,
yeah, like anybody, like, yeah, yeah. Like even going deeper, even going higher than that, like if it's the better player, you've got to, because particularly at positions where you have multiple starting spots, you can't move a guy from your top spot all the way to your bench. But the quarterback is the toughest one for this. Yeah. And so that is where most of the discussions come from.
Right. And just one last closing point from me on this, you know, since we're here in week one, this is an especially hard thing to do, you know, benching a superior player for an inferior player here in week one, you know, based on matchups, because as much as, hey, yeah, the Seahawks are going to be a really good defense and the Cowboys are probably going to be a really terrible defense, this is still a new season. And, you know, for the most part, things might stay the same, but they could change a lot. And they could, you know, this, because like I said, this is a new season. This is a new year. Players develop, teams develop, schemes, coaches, they change. Everything changes. And, you know, I'm just not willing to roll out an inferior player based on data that I'm using from last season to project a matchup. Maybe it gets easier, you know, in the middle of the season. It definitely does. But here in week one, you know, you just got to go with, your guys, you know, you got to go with the guys you took high because they're the better players.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, does does this bring Aaron Rodgers down to the pack a little bit if you're playing in a salary cap game or whatever? Like, yes, this is obviously going to impact Aaron Rodgers. But at the end of the day, like you said, we don't know how much. We know that Seattle's an above average defense, but he's an above average quarterback on an above average offense. So, you know, at some point, the two, you know, the head-on collision of these two, you know, high-powered forces, you know, it's not always going to favor the defense. It's just not how it works. So it'll be a very interesting game to watch, that's for sure. And as someone who doesn't really have a dog in the Aaron Rodgers fight, I only own him on, like, one team. It'll be fun to watch the Green Bay offense. You know, I think we both own some Jordy Nelson. So that'll be fun to watch is see how they navigate the Seattle defense. And then on the other side of the ball is, what is this Seattle offense going to look like? I'm really pretty high on Russell Wilson. I believe that Denny Carter said that he thinks that Russell Wilson could be a top three quarterback this year. And I'm not quite going that far, but I do see him as a potential, like, top six guy this year. So it'll be interesting to see what he does against this Green Bay defense that's not great, but isn't awful either. So that'll be really interesting, but that is only one of many week one games coming up. So I wanted to talk about some week one matchups and week one picks that the two of us have. And the very first one, and this is one that I was just getting giddy about before the show, and so I just want to go ahead and get right into it, is, Matt, let me present this factoid to you. In 2013, when teams were playing the Arizona Cardinals, there were 22 different players who scored a receiving touchdown against the Arizona Cardinals, and 13 of them were tight ends. Like three of them played for the same team. The Cardinals were just a weird, weird team last year for fantasy football. They allowed like 14 fantasy points per game to tight ends, but were like average middle of the pack against every other position. They just could not handle tight ends. And there's obvious like schematic reasons for that. Their safeties aren't as good as their corners. Their linebackers weren't as good as they should have been because Darrell Washington was out, for part of the season. And, you know, other than that, they don't really have a ton of talent at linebacker, at least not in the pass coverage linebacker aspect of things. So there are some things there, but it's just this weird thing that the Cardinals aren't good against tight ends. Washington's out for the season this year. You know, I'm not really sure how much the Honey Badger and Troy Jefferson are going to do against tight ends as safeties there. What are your thoughts on that for this first week in Antonio Gates? He's a guy that I'm really high on this week, but I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on Antonio Gates or Ladarius Green against the Cardinals.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to highlight there because, you know, that was pretty much a fact last year, was that, hey, tight ends were going to eat against the Cardinals, and it was just going to happen every week, and it did happen every week. And it looks like it's going to continue this year. I actually wrote an article last year, you know, breaking down some of the tape of their defense. It's on Backyard Banter. It's, you know, obviously it's pretty outdated, but a lot of what I found was that it was, you know, a lot of miscommunications and, you know, way too aggressive play calling that led to that. And I think that's probably still going to continue. Todd Bowles is still the defensive coordinator there, and they've lost so many guys on it, just right in the middle of that defense that was already not good at covering tight ends. You know, like you mentioned, Washington's gone. Carlos Dansby, you know, he's on the Browns now. He left as a free agent. Matthew is injured. You know, he might be back, but he's probably not going to be 100% for a while. So it should be even worse than it was last year. And so I like Antonio Gates this week against the Cardinals. I mean, I think that's just a no-brainer. Even though I'm not so high on Gates this year, you know, he's obviously not going to be the player that, you know, he's been throughout his career because he's getting up there in age. But for this week, I totally wouldn't be surprised if he catches at least one touchdown and, you know, a few passes. I think Rivers is going to be looking for him. He's going to be open. You know, he's a pretty easy no brainer. You know, if you're a guy that likes to, you know, stream tight ends or wait on tight ends and you have Gates on your roster, I think he's a fairly reliable play, this week. And, you know, that brings us into Ladarius Green. And, you know, I think a lot of people that listen to the podcast and know me, you know that I'm a big upside guy, but I think it's just it's still too hazy, around Green right now to say that he's going to be the one to eat this week. And, you know, I think Gates is a pretty safe play.
Yeah. Ladarius Green has like 21 career catches. I'm not ready to hand over the role of arguably the second or third best tight end in NFL history over to this kid just because he's tall and athletic. Like, I get why people who are into athletic metrics like Ladarius Green, and he's done nothing in his career to, you know, say that he's not this athletic freak who's going to be really good, but he's still super young, and he's buried behind, like I said, one of the best tight ends ever. And if Antonio Gates is still there, he's still the lead tight end. He's still the best option on that. He's the best receiver on that team. And Keenan Allen's a great player, but in terms of just everything, just the total package, proven production, like, Antonio Gates is ridiculous. Like, people forget, like, he kind of came up out of nowhere and it's just been so good that we've kind of started to take it for granted with all this, you know, focus on Green. This is just how good he's been. And, yes, Green's going to have a role, and, that's fine. Even if you're, you know, if you think Green's going to be good, that's fine. That doesn't mean it's time to write off Gates, because there are no other receivers in San Diego except for, Keenan Allen. Malcolm Floyd is good, but he's old and he's often injured. And then it's Eddie Royal and Seyi Ejiro-Tutu. I think I'm pronouncing his name right.
Yeah, that was actually pretty good.
And that's it. Like, they don't have other receiving options. Their two tight ends are two of their three best receivers. And I mean Danny Woodhead, but that's a totally different kind of receiver. Although, interesting fact, Danny Woodhead led the NFL in red zone catches last year. Found that out today doing some research for a piece on Ryan Matthews. But anyway, I think that Antonio Gates is a must start if you've got him. There are very few tight ends I would start over him this week, particularly in daily fantasy where Antonio Gates is dirt cheap. I'm going Antonio Gates all day. You know, I'm starting Jimmy Graham is the most obvious tight end this week. He's got a great matchup, and if you have Jimmy Graham, you're starting him anyway. So,
start your studs.
Have fun with that. Rob Gronkowski, obviously his health is up in the air, but, you know, if you've got Rob Gronkowski against Miami and he's cleared to go, you want him. Julius Thomas against the Colts, you want him. Vernon Davis against the Cowboys, I mean, it depends on what you think about how that game's going to go. Like we talked about earlier, you know, they might not have to throw the ball very much if you think that the 49ers are going to dominate. But, you know, that's where it kind of starts to get hazy, is from Vernon Davis there on down. Is I'd rather have Antonio Gates than pretty much any of those guys. Just because I feel like his matchup is that good. But let's take a look at some other positions. Do you have a quarterback that you particularly like this week that stands out to you? Just any guy, like waiver wire or not, if you got him on your roster or not, you know, for salary cap games, for whatever. Like, is there a quarterback that stands out to you that you like this week?
Yeah, I really like... I really like Kaepernick's obviously one we mentioned, and you know, we went through this whole diatribe about why that might not be a good idea, but I still think it's a good bet to throw him in there. And another one, you know, and let's go really deep. I like Geno this week. You know, he's going against the Raiders, and of course they're a mess as they always are. And you know, he's got Decker, you know, who's going to be a big, you know, everybody, there was a lot of trash talk about Decker. You know, he's not a number one receiver, but he's going to be their number one receiver, and he's going to be a big upgrade from what he has. So I like Geno a lot this week. I also just think, you know, the way this offseason has gone for him, I think he's going to come in with a lot of confidence. You know, they pretty much endorsed him as a starter all offseason. So I think that's a good one. I like Romo this week. It's another one that I like because, you know, we talked about this matchup with this bad defense, and I think the 49ers defense is poised to take a pretty big step back.
Yeah, particularly without Alden. Like, yeah, there's a lot of talent missing from that defense that people, I think, assume is there.
Yeah, Navarro Bowman and Alden Smith are probably their two best defensive players, and they're not going to be there. They're not going to be there for the first part of the season. You know, who knows what's going to be going on with this Ray McDonald thing. Jim Harbaugh has...
Their corners still aren't good.
Yeah, and their corners weren't good to begin with, and they're losing all their great front seven pieces. Justin Smith is another year older. So, man, I think Romo's going to be throwing a ton on a defense that's overrated. So that's a pretty safe bet, you know, and if you're someone that waited around for Romo and kind of took him as a low-level quarterback one, at least that's how some people view him, that's going to be a pretty good bet this week.
Yeah, I've got a lot of Tony Romo, and I'm happy about this week one matchup. You're catching the Niners at the right time, for sure. I agree completely on Geno Smith. I think the world's going to start to implode as we agree on multiple players on this podcast, but... Geno runs, and that cannot be undervalued as an asset for a fantasy quarterback. The last four games of last season, he had 40 or more rushing yards. And you're like, 40 or more rushing yards. That's a touchdown. 40 rushing yards is a touchdown for a quarterback.
Yeah.
In a four-touchdown passing league.
It's a big deal. It seems small, but it's a big deal.
Yes, and he had a rushing touchdown in three of his last four games. He kind of started to get out of the pocket and to run a little bit more. And on top of that, yeah, he's playing the Raiders. And, like, let's just say, for example, no matter what kind of format you're in, you've got Matthew Stafford playing the Giants and Geno Smith playing the Raiders, like, I think that Geno Smith is the better play there. Like, this is that start your studs, like, where do you draw the line? Like, I'm not considering Matthew Stafford enough of a stud to start him against the Giants, who I feel like are going to be a good defense, versus a Geno Smith against a bad defense that he actually did well against bad defenses last year. Like, that's something that bad quarterbacks do, is that they're still good. In most cases, a bad quarterback is still going to be good against a bad defense. The badness of the defense wins out more often than not. And the Oakland defense is going to be bad. So I definitely agree with you there. I also like Sean Hill. I don't think the Minnesota defense is very good. And, particularly in Daly, where you can get Sean Hill for super cheap. Like, if you just want to make a couple lineups, like, I wouldn't advise, like, putting a bunch of your bankroll on Sean Hill. But if you want to make a dollar lineup for a tournament where you just stock up on every other position and, you know, hope that Sean Hill throws two touchdowns, like, that's totally worth it because he's a minimum price guy, and I'm fine with that. But one last guy I really like Carson Palmer. San Diego defense is very good. I feel like that game has a potential to be high scoring because the Arizona defense is also missing a couple guys that are kind of important to them. So if San Diego doesn't get to the point where they're just running down the clock, which I think they're going to try to do, but I feel like, you know, Arizona might keep the pedal down and kind of force that to not happen. I feel like it could be a high scoring game, but either way, I still feel like the Cardinals are going to be able to throw the ball. And that Carson Palmer is, he's not been really prolific at all in any game over the past couple years. But this is a nice cushy matchup against a team that's not really very talented on defense for him to, you know, probably get two or three touchdowns and 300 yards as a guy who's probably on your waiver wire if you're looking to stream quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's a smart play. And you know, the Chargers were a pretty poor defense last year. They looked a little better in the preseason. They've added some corners. But I think that does have the potential to turn into a shootout. And when you're looking for a quarterback to kind of stream, that's important to me, is, you know, is this going to be a game where there's going to be a lot of passes? And so that's, I like Palmer as a good suggestion there. And also in the same game, I think Rivers is going to have a nice week one stat line too.
Yeah. Like I said, the play calling on that offense does worry me a little bit. The fact that they may be content to milk out the clock and be the anti Eagles, you know, if they get any sort of lead. Is a concern there, but I'm with you that matchup wise, I like that matchup for him, and I think that that's why you like Gates, you like Green, you like Danny Woodhead, and you like the possibility of two or three passing touchdowns out of Rivers.
Yep, definitely.
Let's move on to running backs real quick. A guy I don't like, and this. this shouldn't come as a surprise, but it probably will because people probably think I'm a homer. I don't like Doug Martin this week going up against the Carolina front seven. Thomas Davis, Luke Kuechly, Star Lotulelei, Charles Johnson, Greg Hardy, they're just going to eat the Tampa Bay offensive line's lunch all day, and there's just not going to be anywhere for Doug Martin to go. Is there a chance that Doug Martin still winds up scoring a touchdown or two? Yes, but I'm not banking on that. Doug Martin is arguably the second best position player on the Tampa Bay offense, and that means that if the Bucs are going to score, there's high odds that it's him. But even still, there's a very good chance that this game ends up 9-6. And you just don't want... I don't think you want any part of it from any side. I don't think that there's a position player in this game worth starting. I think both defenses are good plays. I think that the kickers are decent plays because I feel like there could be some turnovers that turn into field goals. But otherwise, I don't want any part of this game. But I think Martin in particular is a guy that you may have took early, but you may... He's below the start your studs line, and you may want to have him on your bench this week.
Yeah, that's a smart move. You know, that Carolina front seven is ferocious, and you know, I think it's just going to take time. I kind of mentioned last podcast that Martin was a player I'm warming up to long term, but this is just going to be such a... You know, if Cam Newton's hurt, this is going to be a pretty awful game to watch in general. I mean, it's just going to be...
We're both going to be watching, but that's because we have vested interest in the teams competing. Definitely. But
it's going to be a tough watch. And,
yes, definitely.
And I'm not really fired up about any fantasy players in that matchup in particular. I think it has a chance to be a pretty defensive heavy, you know, quote unquote slugfest or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's, that's one I'm shying away from, Martin this week. You know, one player that I think is going to have a nice week is Shane Vereen, you know, going against the Dolphins. You know, their linebackers are terrible in Miami, and he really ate them up on, you know, like wheel routes and just passes out of the backfield. Just those Ellerby, Wheeler, those guys just could not cover Vereen last year.
This is specifically we were talking about this before the podcast. This is specifically in a PPR. Vereen still has value outside of it, but ideally... For a starting running back spot, even for Vereen, as good as he is, you still really have trouble starting him in a non-PPR.
Yeah, I mean, of course you're probably right about that, but at the same time, you know, I think that he's going to have value because they with all the talk about how they were going to release Ridley and all that, you know, I do think that.
He's the best running back they have.
Yeah. So definitely. I think that they're starting to feel a little more comfortable with him as a sort of a, you know, not a bell cow running back, but a guy that they can rely on. The tackles.
I still feel like Ridley and James White are going to see 70% of the carries on that team.
Yeah, they're going to get theirs, but I think that.
Really, I think what you're hoping for is in good matchups, Shane Vereen's going to catch 6 or 7 passes for 60 to 70 yards with the potential for more if he breaks one and then gets like 5 carries for 25 yards. And that does add up to a nice day, even in standard. But in PPR, that's a ridiculous day for what is an RB2 or 3, depending on where you drafted him.
Yeah, definitely. He's just one that I'm gonna have my eye on it, and you know if he's on my teams, I'm definitely thinking about.
Yeah, this is a week to use him. Yeah. If you drafted him, like I said, I'm shying away from him a little bit in a standard, just until like I feel like we need to see that they trust him as more of a featured back. But if it's a PPR, he's a must start this week. I totally agree with that. I'll stick with a negative here. A couple more guys I'm avoiding this week. I want no part of Bernard Pierce or any Baltimore Ravens running back against the Bengals. I want no part of Reggie Bush against the Giants. And I don't want Ryan Matthews against the Cardinals. In a PPR, I still like Danny Woodhead. I still feel like the same reason that I like the tight ends there, I like Woodhead because I feel like the non-corner defenders in Arizona aren't that great. So I feel like Woodhead's going to have some space. Ryan Matthews' role is suited to being shut down by what the Cardinals do well on defense. So I just don't like that at all. So there's a couple guys I don't like. Guys I do like, I like Zach Stacy this week. I don't own a ton of him. I'm not really high on him, but if you've got him, this is the week to play him against the Vikings. Andre Ellington. I really like Andre Ellington this week because no matter how the game goes, if it's running or if it's passing heavy for the Arizona defense, you want Andre Ellington. And start your studs, but hey, LeSean McCoy and Jamaal Charles have really good matchups this week. So yeah. No matter what format you're playing in, those guys are obviously at the top of your board. But if you're in daily, like, find a way to make a couple lineups where you pay up for those guys because they are in as cushy of a matchup as that they'll get all season, and they're more than worth your investment.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, two other guys on the same team, actually, Frank Gore and even Carlos Hyde a little bit, because, you know, we've mentioned this Dallas defense, and I think they're actually, you know, they can be had up front even before they can in the secondary. And I think Frank Gore's, I mean, you know, if you have him, you play him this week. It's you know, a no-brainer.
Yeah, and if you're in a deep enough league, Hyde is definitely a flex-worthy guy. Yeah.
Or if you're in a daily league and you want to spend big on wide receivers, tight ends, which, you know, hey, if you know me, you know that's kind of what I like to do.
I feel like there are better cheap options at running back than Carlos Hyde, but I don't completely disagree.
Yeah, I just feel like he's guaranteed to at least get, you know, double-digit carries just because they're going to be – I think they're going to be leading a lot. They're going to be trying to milk the clock out. I think he – and, you know, he has a chance. He's a big back. He has a chance to – with some decent speed too, you know, good feet. I think he has the chance to maybe even score, you know, if the game gets out of hand. It's just something – again, he's cheap, so whatever.
Like, in daily fantasy, he's – like on DraftKings, for example, he's 3,900, but Fred Jackson is 4,400 and Jeremy Hill is 4,400. Like, I'm more likely to take those two.
Yeah, two other guys on the same team there too, Spiller and your boy Fred Jackson. You know, I think you can start both of those guys with confidence.
Oh, Fred Jackson is a must start against the Bears.
Yeah, and especially
I don't care what people
so
think
cheap.
The Bears have done to improve on defense over this summer. It's not good enough to turn that awful run defense into anything resembling a good run defense. I don't like CJ Spiller, but if you've got him, you might as well start him this week.
Yeah, I mean, this is the week to do it. Yes. I mean, those young, inexperienced linebackers, they're not going to be able to stick with him.
Yeah.
You know, they don't even have good, like, coverage safety.
And they're going to have to throw, and when E.J. Manuel throws, that means he's throwing to backs and tight ends because he doesn't actually have vision to look down the field. So, that's good advice to go on there, is that you want to play against the Bears' run defense until we see different. So, moving on to wide receivers, we've talked about this game a lot already, so I won't go into too much depth, but I like Larry Fitzgerald this week. I really like Dez Bryant this week. We talked about the San Francisco corners not being very good. No matter how this game goes, Tony Romo is going to look to Dez Bryant, so I like him a lot. We talked about Decker. I like Decker this week. A guy that's kind of under the radar, and so this isn't this guy might not even be on any roster in any league that you play in. Obviously, a very cheap option in daily, but Donnie Avery is going to be the number one receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs this week against Tennessee. I don't expect them to throw a lot or for a lot of yards. But if you're desperate for a wide receiver, if you want to go a super cheap route at one of your receiver spots in daily, I mean, it's the number one receiver on a team that's playing an awful pass defense in the Tennessee Titans. So I feel like that's a nice, deep, speculative flyer play if you're, you know, in some weird deep league where you're already hurting it at wide receiver. But other than that, I feel like there's a lot of good matchups out there for receivers. But I'm curious to know what some of the guys that you're looking at are.
Yeah, I think Andre Johnson really comes to mind. You know, they're going against the Washington defense, and
who are not good.
Yeah, they're terrible again. I mean, again, every year they're bad. They're going to be bad again this year. D'Angelo Hall is not going to be able to handle him as much as he might think he can handle Andre Johnson. I think Johnson's going to have a big game. And, you know, Fitzpatrick, I think I've said on the podcast before, I'm not a fan of his. I don't expect him to last long as the starter there, not because the other guys are any good, but just he's just the type of guy that's going to get himself benched sooner or later. But anyway, it's not the point. He's going to feed a guy like Johnson, you know, especially short passes, all that. Just keep your Ryan Fitzpatrick stuff to yourself.
This slander, I cannot put up with this slander. It is
I know, he's such a smart guy. He went to Harvard and all that, but
he's good. He's a good quarterback.
Just stop. That's terrible.
He's a good quarterback.
Anyways, we're talking about wide receivers. Focus. Stay on task, Leo. but anyways, yeah, so Johnson's a good one, comes to mind. I like all the guys in Denver. You know, that's not breaking news, except Welker, because he apparently popped a molly at the Kentucky Derby. So he'll be suspended the first four games, or you know, that seems to be the way that's going. So except for Welker, you know, Demaryius Thomas, obviously start your studs. He's going to be in there. But Emmanuel Sanders, I think, is going to have a big game against the Colts. Cody Latimer, Andre Caldwell, I think, you know, one of those guys is going to have a pretty nice game. You know, maybe if you're a safer person, you like Caldwell better, or if you know your big upside, you go with Latimer. I'm not sure you're really going to start either one of those guys at this point, but maybe you consider picking them up on the cheap in a daily league. But I think Sanders is primed to have a really nice game this week. The Giants receivers, I've kind of been intrigued with, because you know the Detroit cornerbacks are pretty poor. But good luck picking between one of them. That's just kind of one of those. See, this is where I'm not sure you just necessarily play the matchup, but I think one of them is going to have a good game. You know, either Victor Cruz or Ruben Randall. It's just kind of, you know, you're going to pick in between the two, and I'm not sure I really want to pick the wrong one. But so Johnson's one that sticks out for sure. And Anquan Boldin is a name we keep coming back to, the 49ers playing against the Cowboys. I think, you know, Crabtree, I heard today he's got some. A hip issue, maybe it's a hip or something.
He's hurt. Yeah, I think he's got calf or something. I don't know.
Yeah. That's correct. That's what it was. You know, he's always got something going on. So I think Boldin is going to be the prime beneficiary there. I think he's gonna take a lot of the open space that will be plentiful against the Cowboys. And last one from me on wide receivers. Hang on just a second. Yeah, last one from me with wide receivers is Cordarrelle Patterson against the Rams. I think he's primed to score at least once. That defense is overrated, and I think this is going to be a surprisingly good offense. So I would feel pretty confident in rolling him out in week one, and you can write that down in pen.
I could have written that down in pen before the podcast started with your infatuation with him. Marcus Colston.
I like to be predictable.
Marcus Colston's a guy I like this week. Atlanta defense, not good. And obviously Jimmy Graham's a big target in that offense, but Colston's not going away. And I also like Julian Edelman this week for the reasons that you were talking about with Vereen, basically. Those all apply to Edelman in that the linebackers and really a lot of the defenders in Miami really aren't that great. And no matter Gronkowski's status, Edelman is still kind of the glue that keeps that offense together. So particularly in a PPR, I like him this week. We're not going to talk about kickers all that often, but just in general, like if you don't have a kicker or if you're looking to pick a kicker, is there anything you look for when you're picking a kicker? Like give us your Twitter shortened answer for like, what is it that you look for in a kicker?
Decent offense. Because you don't want a super high-powered one that's going to just score a bunch of you know extra points, but you know just a pretty good offense that's going to have a nice day against a decent defense. You know, you don't want someone that's just going to be kicking a bunch of extra points. You want to, you know, the Chiefs kicker. You've never heard of his name. He just won the job there. He's a guy I've been picking up in a lot of daily leagues, you know, when you have to have a kicker, because I think,
yeah, this is why I like DraftKings. Props to DraftKings. They exactly. don't have the kicker spot Thank because it's God. Ridiculous, but
yeah, I was so glad to see that, you know, that's terrific. FanDuel still has kickers. They need to do something about that.
Cairo Santos is the Chiefs kicker, and like, yeah, they're going to score a bunch of points, but they may not score a bunch of touchdowns. Chandler Cantazaro, who won the Arizona Cardinals kicking job, same thing for him. Shane Graham is the Saints kicker once again, and he represents a probably going to kick a lot of extra points guy, but sometimes that's not the end of the world. If he tacks on a 40-yarder and has four extra points, you know, that's not the end of the world. I really think that if you're in a, and obviously if you're in daily, you might not be playing on Thursday night, but, you know, if you've got the Green Bay or the Seattle kicker, you know, Crosby or Hauschka, you know, obviously you've got those guys on your roster already, but, that's the kind of game where I like the kickers is when it's, going to be a competitive game all the way through. You know, teams aren't going to be going for it on fourth down. Like, that's something that I look for is a good competitive game, because when it's a blowout, there's reasons for both teams not to kick field goals. Like the Jacksonville Philadelphia game this week is one where I probably, if I had my choice, I wouldn't start either of those kickers. And if I did, it would be the Jacksonville kicker, because not only might the Eagles be up by a lot, but Chip Kelly's their coach. So I could see them just not kicking field goals at some point. And that's something to worry about. But otherwise, really for me, I just kind of look at matchups like I would for a quarterback and just see, you know, is this a good defense they're going against? And what are my odds of them scoring points, but also not too good of a matchup. So like you said, it's kind of a, finding the right balance there. But for the most part, it's just kind of pick a kicker I know the team trusts enough to kick, and then just kind of hope for the best, because it's really largely a crapshoot, and it's based on the offense that they're on more than it is their own ability. So you can't really, you know, do spend too much time on it. So
we've already spent way too much time on it,
but we've addressed it now. We're not going to talk about kickers ever again. It's stupid. Don't have kickers in your league is my advice. And then when it comes to defenses, it's kind of as simple as you want to pick the best defense or the best defense with a bad matchup. The best defenses get the best scoring over the course of the season, but on a week-to-week basis, sometimes touchdowns will make that skewed in one direction or another. But over the course of the season, the best defenses are the ones that finish highest. That's just how the correlation there it works. So assuming you didn't spend an early pick on a defense, do you have a defense this week that stands out to you as a good matchup that you like?
Yeah, New York is the one that everybody's talking about. New York Jets, that is. They are playing the Raiders, who are now starting Derek Carr at quarterback. And while that's not as tasty and, you know, put it in the bank that it's going to be a good fantasy day as if Matt Schaub was starting, I still think, you know, rookie Rex Ryan defense, they have a bad secondary, but I still think that's a pretty good one to roll out there as week one. The Lions defense, you know, I mentioned that the wide receivers could have a good day, but the Giants wide receivers could have a good day against the Lions. But I still think that you know, the Lions are – they were – really great against, you know, stopping fantasy running backs last year. If that defensive line is a go, and it sounds like Ziggy Ansah, you know, might be healthy, they could really, you know, wreck the Giants' day, up front. And it sounds like that Giants offense has had a little trouble, you know, kind of gelling, to the new system. And so, you know, week one, it might be just a total disaster as it has been in the preseason. You know, and that could obviously force a few, you know, Eli Manning, you know, turnovers. So that's one I actually really like in a lot of daily leagues. They're super cheap. The Lions are, so, you know, that's one that I really like this week. Roll that one out there. The Texans defense, you know, I'm not so sold that it's going to be this great unit just because of Watt and Clowney, you know, throughout the duration of the year, but they're playing Washington in week one. And speaking of another preseason, you know, disaster, that Washington's offense, you know, I think, Griffin looks very aware of contact around him right now. And, you know, I think he's going to see some of that with the newly paid, you know, JJ Watt and, Clowney there. That could get ugly quick. You know, if they get to him a few times early, Griffin could, you know, really kind of go into a shell, you know, make a few poor throws as we saw throughout the preseason. So Houston and Detroit are one of the ones that I think are getting kind of overlooked right now, and they're super cheap, or at least reasonably cheap in daily leagues that you can go with.
Yeah, I agree with most of those. I will also add in that the on the flip side of discussing the Detroit defense, I feel like the Giants defense isn't an awful pick this week either. The Detroit offense is it's okay. It's not super efficient. It's got a lot of guys who can put up like bulk numbers, but none of them, like other than Calvin Johnson, who's obviously great. Nothing about that really stands out to me. And I feel like they'll be able to contain that running game pretty well. But that's not really, you know, one of my favorites. I do really like the Jets. I know I sound like a homer and I mentioned it earlier, but I think that the Tampa Bay defense is one of the better picks this week, as is the Carolina defense. I feel like both of those defenses are way ahead of the offense they're going against, in this game. And so I feel like it's really tough to go wrong with either one. I would choose the Tampa Bay defense though, because they have better defensive backs and I feel like they have that Lovie Smith takeaways mentality already, and that's going to be something that obviously will score fantasy points. So those will be the ones that I would point out. And then also the Chicago Bears, not because they're good, but because they're playing Buffalo and Buffalo is bad.
Yes, sir.
So that would be mine. So now we've kind of gone through all the positions there for you. We might not go as in-depth every week, but we will definitely give you some picks every week. But now we want to go into some questions from our readers, and the first one I've got here is from Jimmy Jackson, G Vegas Jim on Twitter, who asks, better starting running back Le'Veon Bell or Frank Gore? This is tough because obviously we didn't get a ton of info about, like, is it PPR or not, is it dynasty or not, is it keeper or not. If it's a PPR, I'm gonna go with Bell, because I feel like he is enough of a workhorse and is going to get enough volume, including the catches, to make that worth it. But in a standard league, and if we're not talking about keepers or anything, I feel like I'd rather have Gore. If we're talking for 1 week, maybe, like if this is like a week one question, it's Gore without a doubt because he's got the better matchup in the first week against the Cowboys. But if this is for the season, I think that in a standard league, I'm going with Gore. In a PPR or in any sort of keeper league, I'm going with Bell because he's the, yeah, he's not on the end of his career.
Yeah, I like Gore a lot this year. As a you know, you can, especially in PPR leagues, you can wait around and get him pretty late in drafts. You know, he's a good wait on running back too sort of guy. But I think it's Bell all the way across the board. I'm not too worried about LeGarrette Blount there. You know, I know that people are getting, you know, kind of a little concerned that he might take too much of the workload. I still think Bell is, you know, he's a better player, and I'm just kind of hoping that reason wins out, even though that, you know, that doesn't always work out. I just think that he's going to be, I feel pretty comfortable saying he's going to outscore Gore this year, as much as I like Gore.
Yeah, I feel like I've just got too many T-Rich type worries about Le'Veon Bell that I just feel like there's a huge possibility that he just totally falls off the map. But
yeah, I really don't, you know, and I know there's that sentiment out there, and I know you've mentioned on the podcast before, we've never gotten a chance to discuss it in depth. I don't really see the two situations as the same, and you know, Bell has slimmed down this offseason. He's gotten, you know, so I've heard some people say he looks noticeably quicker and everything. I don't really have the same worries, but you know, if you do, I'm not really going to talk you out of it.
I don't feel like there's that big of a gap between them, even if you're high on Bell. I don't feel like he's that far ahead of Gore this year. Obviously, there's the potential that Gore is going to fall off as the year goes on, but as we sit right now, assuming that Gore is the starter and he's healthy, I don't feel like there was ever really that big of a gap between them, particularly with Bell's off-the-field stuff that's come up now, that, you know, just his standing with his head coach is in question at this point. You know, and that's a concern. But we'll go into that maybe on a different episode if Jim wants to let us know, you know, if maybe that's a keeper question or a trade question or whatever. Like, we can go into that more in depth. But I feel like that for now you've got a split decision. But I think we both agree that this week you would start Gore.
Yes.
Okay. But that's not really a discussion because you probably can start both in your league. All right. The next one is from John P. Slodos, John_ZSOLTOS on Twitter. And he asked Matt, he has Adrian Peterson, Gio, Le'Veon Bell, Shane Vereen, Alshon Jeffrey, Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, Golden Tate, Kendall Wright. And he was offered Antonio Brown for Gio Bernard. So for reference, that was Gio Bernard, who is one of his four running backs when the other three are Peterson, Le'Veon Bell, and Vereen. And he asked if he should make that trade or stay put. And my instant reaction was, there's no way I'm doing that unless I only start one running back, because I don't want to roll this season with just Adrian Peterson, Le'Veon Bell, and Shane Vereen as my running backs, particularly if it's a standard league. If it's a PPR, I'm a little more okay with that because of Vereen. But if I've got to start two running backs and I only have those three to choose from, I'm not comfortable with it at all, even with Antonio Brown's addition there. But I'm curious as to what you think there, Matt.
Yeah, I was definitely a little more willing to do the trade. I think that, you know, he's already pretty strong at running back. I think, personally, in my mind, that's a strong, you know, top three running backs, even without Gio, you know, AP, Le'Veon Bell, and Shane Vereen. I'd feel pretty comfortable, even in a standard league, I'd still feel okay with that as my top three running backs, you know, starting those guys. I feel like you could start those guys probably every week. I definitely got away with even starting Vereen in some standard leagues last year, as a running back three. I'm not comfortable with Edelman, Welker, Tate, or Wright as an every week wide receiver too, as I would be Antonio Brown. I just think he's upgrading the overall quality of his roster if he goes with Brown. So for me personally, I mean, I love Gio. I think he's going to be a top 10 running back this year, but I just like the overall quality of the roster. I will feel much better about with Brown on the team, you know, regardless of whether it's a PPR or not. I would
probably, if it's a non-PPR, I guess I can see needing a second receiver there because you've got a couple of PPR dependent receivers, yeah. and Edelman, Welker, and Wright. I'm still okay with, assuming it's a traditional where you've got two running back, two wide receivers, and a flex. I'm okay with AP, Gio, and then Le'Veon or Vereen, Jeffrey, and then Edelman or, you know, Tate or Wright, depending on matchups. Like, I'm okay with that as a five every week. I feel like Brown makes that better, but if you've got to start two running backs, then you're really digging into your depth there in a way that I don't like. But if, like I said, if you only start one running back, or if it's a PPR, I'm a little more okay with it. I would still try to turn it into Le'Veon Bell for Antonio Brown if possible, but I know no one's going to do that at this point. But yeah, so I think we've got another split decision here. It's good to see us disagreeing again after agreeing too much at the beginning of the podcast.
Things are back to normal.
I feel like it kind of boils down to our thoughts on running backs, is that I like having that running back depth and we disagree on Le'Veon Bell. So that's kind of where that stems from. I would try to flip Le'Veon Bell if I were you, but obviously that's always not always an option. And our final question comes from NFL Daft Scout, which is the same as Matt Miller of Bleacher Report's Twitter, except without the R in draft. And he says that it seems like everyone is down on Green Bay's wide receivers against Seattle and would like to hear our thoughts. Well, you've already kind of heard them, but just to be a little more specific about it, how do you feel about the we'll stick to the top two here, unless you feel strongly about any of the non-top two receivers in Green Bay this week. What do you feel about them this week, and kind of how are you approaching them in your league? Because I'm sure that you own a good amount of Jordy Nelson this year.
Yeah, Jordy Nelson's on a lot of my teams because I like to go, you know, Jimmy Graham first round and then come back and hopefully get a guy like Jordy Nelson, who I think is going to be a strong wide receiver one as long as Aaron Rodgers is playing this year, which it looks like, you know, we're all a go there. So I'm rolling him out there no matter what. You know, that's a start your stud right there. Nelson is a stud to me, and there's almost no reason he's ever going to be on my bench. So that Nelson's a go. Cobb, you know, I'm not the biggest Cobb guy, and especially where you have to take him. But if you take him there, he's probably one of your top two receivers, if he's not. So he might be some people's wide receiver one. I've seen that before. And so you're probably going to be stuck with him. But, you know, I'm not as high on that, but I still think this is going to be, like we've mentioned before, just because this is a great defense doesn't mean that they're not going to produce fantasy points because, you know, they're going to have to throw. This is going to be a competitive game, I think, to the end. And Green Bay's offense is just good enough to be viable against, you know, even a great defense. So I still think Cobb is going to get his. I'm just really not that crazy about Cobb as a fantasy player, unless PPR makes a big difference if that's the case. But I think you could find better options, but you probably can't if you drafted him.
Yeah, that's the thing is based on draft position, you pretty much have to start these guys. But I will say with Cobb is that since he's more of the quote unquote possession receiver to quote unquote Nelson's big play receiver, that playing against a team that runs some cover three to where maybe you can find some of those holes in the defense and settle down for some chunk yardage is that particularly in a PPR, that's where Cobb is going to, you know, make his money this year. And that's no different against the Seahawks. Whether or not Nelson is able to get those big plays comes into question, but you drafted him because you think he can. And you were right for drafting him because you think he can, because that's what he does. He's a great wide receiver. So, I'm starting both in almost every case. Like, you're going to downgrade them a little bit based on their opposition, but to be down on them is fine. To completely ignore them is not. So I wouldn't, you know, disregard them, but it's okay to be down on them because they're going up against very good competition. They're in a very tough matchup. So, I feel like it's okay to be, a little skeptical about the Green Bay wide receivers, but I would not dismiss them, altogether. Matt, do we have any other questions?
Yeah, I actually got a few. We can just kind of throw out here and go through them real quick. One keeper question I got, from Tanner Craker at DraftTJC on Twitter. He sent us in two keeper league. I have Megatron, Demarius, Gronk, and Julius Thomas. Who do I keep? I'll let you go first on that one.
Say those again so I can reprocess this through my brain.
Calvin Johnson, Demarius Thomas, Rob Gronkowski, and Julius Thomas.
Congrats, first of all. And how many can he keep?
Yeah, right? He can keep two of them. So
I would keep the receivers. I would keep Calvin and Demarius. I feel like those are two of the top eight players. So I'm roster construction, whatever, you know, toss it all out the window. I just want the two best players, and I feel like those are it.
Yeah, and I think you could probably guess that I'm going to tell him to keep Rob Gronkowski and Calvin Johnson. Yeah. I'm good. I don't think you throw back a player like Gronk, you know, no matter injuries or whatever. And obviously we don't have, you know, whether he has to give up draft compensation or what.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if Gronk's a later pick than a Demaryius Thomas, like that does make that conversation a bit different. But
right, yeah, that's a big deal to me. But for just the data that we have, I think you keep Calvin Johnson and Rob Gronkowski, because they're two of the guys that just win you your weeks. Every week they can win you games and, by big point margins. So that's a big deal to me.
Okay, I've got a question for you, Matt Harmon.
Sure.
I'm in a 32-team PPR league, and a trade just went through where someone sent Ryan Matthews and Josh Morgan for Jordan Matthews and Jordan Cameron. Who do you think won that trade?
Wow. For one, you're in a 32-team league. You probably need to get a life. you didn't ask me that question, but I'm going to give you the answer anyways. That's tough. So Ryan Matthews and Josh Morgan for Jordan Matthews and Jordan Cameron, correct? Yeah. Well, I don't think Josh Morgan has any trade value. Or I don't think he has any value this year at all. So I'm going to go with the Jordan Cameron and Jordan Matthews side. This is just a redraft league, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not crazy about Matthews' redraft value, but I still think that he's going to have enough of a role. He's going to have more of a role on his team than Josh Morgan is. And, I love tight ends, and I think Cameron is the clear-cut number four guy this year, so I'm going with that side.
All right, cool. So you thought I got the better end of that trade.
Hey, there you go.
Awesome. Well, I think that's it for today. If we've got any more questions, we can answer those on Twitter and stuff, but definitely feel free to send both Matt and I questions whenever you'd like. That will do it for this week. Definitely keep sending us questions for next week. ask us questions whenever. Just hit us up on Twitter. We will do our best to explain our thoughts. But for Matt Harmon, I am Leo Howell. This has been the Fantasy Game Plan podcast. You can check us out on iTunes. Just search for Fantasy Game Plan. You can find Matt's work and embedded versions of the podcast at thebackyardbanter.com. And you can find my work at numberfire.com and at Bucks Nation. You can also find Matt at footballguys.com. And on Twitter, he is Matt Harmon_BYB. I am at Leo Howell and then the number 8. So you can catch up with us there, and then we will be back next week with another episode of the Fantasy Game Plan.